Hi, this is Neil Crawford, the founder of Anytime Soccer Training, and I got a special message for you. If I can create a podcast, you definitely can create a podcast. So I want you to stop what you're doing and do this right now. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. In a few simple clicks, you can get your message out to the world just like me. I was intimidated. I didn't think I could do it, but now I can't stop podcasting, and I love it. Now I'm able to interview people from all over the world and then share it with my friends, family, players, and coaches. I absolutely love this app, and I recommend you download it. Again, download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Thanks, and I hope you enjoy the show.
Hey, guys. This is Neil Crawford with Anytime Soccer Training. Welcome to another installment of the Inside Scoop Youth Soccer Podcast, speaking to parents and coaches from around the world. If you haven't heard of Anytime Soccer Training, we're launching a wonderful website this summer, and it's designed specifically to help children master the ball, master the game, get foot skills and endurance. What's going to make our program different is a number of things. Number one, all the videos are 100% follow along. Parents just need to hit play. We're going to have over 1,000 videos and 200 hours of content. Constantly going to be adding new content that cover all the major areas of individual skill development. I'm a parent who knew nothing about soccer when I started this journey. And finally, I'm creating the product that I wish I had 10 years ago to help my son get better. So if you haven't done so already, check out www.anytime-soccer.com. And we're doing a special promotion where we're effectively just giving, throwing the kitchen sink so you guys can learn more about our product. When you subscribe, you're going to get a 7-week ball mastery challenge that has over 50 videos, juggling, ball mastery, and dribbling. And look for us this summer. We're going to do a special promotion where parents can get the product at a very reduced price, extremely reduced, so that you can learn how it works. Okay, so let's hop into the show. If you've been following the show, last week I interviewed a gentleman from Manchester, England, and it was wonderful. If you haven't checked that one out, definitely check us out, the first show that we did. This year, today, we're traveling all the way to another continent and another city in another country to interview a coach who was born in Ghana but has ties to the States. And this is going to be very interesting because he can juxtapose both systems, and he really understands the talent level in the States, and so he can kind of put that into the perspective of explaining how Ghana works. His name is, and don't let me mispronounce the last name, Isaac Okolache. I hope I got that right.
You got it. Akolache.
I'm good. All right. So one more thing to set the show up for Coach Isaac and to set the show up for our listeners. The Inside Scoop is a detailed, in-depth understanding of what the soccer pathways are like in other cities around the world. Now, as a parent, I like details. I want to know exactly what is going on. Not this lofty youth soccer development. No. If I move to, and we'll say Accra, Ghana for now, but he'll share his story and we'll dig into it. If I move there tomorrow with a 10-year-old and I want them to play soccer, I want to know what is available. And the way we're going to set it up and the way we tee it up is, you are going to tell me about Ghana, I'm going to tell you about the States, and we're going to compare. All right, so that's enough talking from me. Coach Isaac, let's learn more about what you do, your background. Let's hear about what you're doing now, because I know you're coaching, you're working with kids, you got a lot going on, and then we'll jump into the Inside Scoop. So welcome to the show.
Thank you, Neil. Appreciate it. Feel welcome. I feel welcome.
Thank you.
I try to speak slowly.
No worries. And I may turn my camera off because my internet has been acting up. And this podcast right now, the first version will be audio. So don't worry if you see my camera going on and off.
Okay.
All right. So tell me about yourself.
Yeah. So my name is Isaac Chachu Akolache, and I was born in Ghana, West Africa. And I've been in the U.S. for 10 years now, and I've done some coaching in Africa, Ghana, obviously, and I've done some coaching here in the U.S. And I'm still single, and I'm still working on trying to settle. But for now, I'm doing talent developing and working daytime job as a welder.
Okay, and where are you coaching at, and where do you live at in the States? Let's start there first, and then we'll jump into your background from Ghana.
Oh, okay. Currently, I live in Utah.
Okay. You live in Utah. Wow, that's from Ghana to Utah. And then and you're coaching there, and you're working. So let's take it from the top. All right. So if someone moves here from Ghana and wanted to sign their child up for youth soccer, this is what I would basically tell them about Cary, North Carolina, where I'm at. Okay. So I would say, listen, roughly speaking, you know, if the kid is, say, 8 to between 8, 10, that age, we got three major tiers, okay?
Okay.
The first tier is recreational. Mommy and daddy are the coach. Kid plays, has one practice. I wouldn't consider the practice that serious. And they play on the weekend, and it's just for fun, okay? Just to get exercise. The next, and the season lasts about eight weeks. The next tier is challenge. That's for kids who, again, don't want to commit full time or a lot of time to soccer, but want a little bit more experience than more serious experience than recreational. In that scenario, in many cases, the parent will still be a coach, but they will be supported either by a coaching director, or there may be a part-time coach that travels throughout the different teams to give guidance. Those seasons last a little bit longer. They're a little bit more serious, but the children that usually do the challenge programs have zero desire to take the game to the next level in general. And then the highest level you can play at, and this is a general term, is travel. And travel soccer means something different for each age group. But for the younger ages, travel soccer can be defined. They'll call it something like pre-academy or youth development program. And it's a year, typically a 10-month program. You'll definitely have a professional coach, and you'll certainly practice at least 2, possibly 3 days a week, games on the weekend. And as you get older, it becomes even more competitive, and in theory, you're gearing up to make that club's first team. I use a lot of air quotes, though, because this is not exactly – this is a generalization. Each club does it a little bit differently, and we have a pay-to-play system, which you are aware of. So every kid that plays travel soccer, they can get access to travel soccer even if they're not fully committed because the parents are paying. And these travel soccer clubs have various teams that support them. So where it's different than in Europe, for example, is Manchester United or Arsenal, they're not going to have like 10 teams for all the different levels. They're going to have a first team for each age group, and then they may have a pool of players that they're looking at. But there's going to be no such thing as a gold, blue, white, yellow. No. But in the States, you have to have these teams if you have a big club because the club is funded by the parent tuition. So to put it all in a bow, I would tell the parent, depending on how serious you are, you have rec, challenge, and or travel, the different clubs within the travel system, some big, some small. The coaching may vary. And the final point is those clubs are part of one of three major governing bodies. One is U.S. Soccer, right, which is governed by state municipalities. One is U.S. Club Soccer, which is an independent operator, and they give a license. And then in California, you have other governing bodies. The only reason that's really important is because if you wanted to start a club, and it does impact sort of what clubs you can, I mean, who you can play and how you can play. So what happens in the States is it's almost like boxing in some regards. You can be the champion of a U.S. club sanctioned tournament or league and never play a U.S. soccer tournament in a U.S. soccer tournament or league. And that has implications on the scouting and the pipeline, the national team pipeline. And I'm not going to go too much into that, but each podcast I'm going to dig a little deeper into the U.S. system and so that our listeners can follow along. So that's what would happen if you came to the States and you wanted to play soccer. Now, if I move to Ghana, especially, you know, Accra, we'll say that for now, Accra, then what are you going to tell me? I got a 10-year-old, I'm ready to play, he's ready to play. What are you going to, what opportunities do they have? How does the system work in general?
Yeah, so we have, when I left Ghana, which was 2010, before that, I grew up in a system called Coast Division.
Okay.
So in the Coast Division, they have under 12, under 14, and under 17. And it depends on which area you grew up in. Most of the areas have like two or more clubs, and they compete among themselves when it comes to scouting players. Now, we don't pay to play, and we train 5 days a week, and we play match on Sunday or Saturday. Either way, we're still practicing 5 days a week.
So let me interrupt you for a second. So, and this is good. So here in the States, I would say go down to, not even the States, in Cary, we have a club, Triangle United or NCFC. They're nonprofits that offer soccer experiences, soccer teams or whatever. Are you saying, hey, in my area, depending on your little regional area, go to this club, they have a team, fill out your paperwork, and you're on a particular team? Is there a tryout, or you just get placed in a general pool, and or is it set up so rigidly, like by age, like it is here?
No, when I was playing, I think now they're doing it by age, because when the players get to the national level, at times the player happens to be really great, but then his age is overaged. And there was a whole lot of, like, skirmish that went on in that era when I was growing up. So now I think they're going by ages. But when I was growing up, we went by height. So in the area I grew up, there was three clubs. One was King Harrison. One was St. Stars. And the other one was Mighty Victory.
Oh, wow, that, so they went by height. That's, man, I wish they did that now. I don't know. So because in the States, people are complaining about birth year versus school year. I think if they went by height, I don't know what would happen. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So then, you remember I told you in the States, and you know this, it's separated by this how competitive you are. If my child signs up for one of these clubs, is it broken out by, like, you're serious, not so serious, or really serious, or is everybody lumped into the same pool?
Okay, so the thing is, when it comes to address the age issue, usually no one under 14, No one 14 will play under 12. Because usually you probably your height would have passed it. So that was the system we had. But there was age incorporated. Let's say somebody's 13, but they're really short. They find a way to sneak him to play for the under 12 because he might not have a chance to play for under 14. And there's no point of having such a player sit and wait another year to play.
Okay, so now, and that's a good perspective, and I, you know, I can kind of understand that because in Europe, you know, they're pushing for biobanding, which is what it sounds like is if your teams are using a crude biobanding sort of metric where they know the age, they're looking at the development, and they're estimating the height. But what I'm asking is, you know, in the States, we have recreational, challenge, and competitive. If I come to your, if I come to Ghana and say, listen, my son is really, really competitive, are those teams broken out by in those rigid categories, or is it more of a general pool? You just, there is no rec, challenge, and competitive. I don't know.
Yeah, so there was only one competitive system we had. That was the COS system. But then we had school inter-schools, which is like our Premier League, because that's where you see we get to travel to play other schools. So that is something we looked up to too. And also after playing that competition, we get to play, other regions. We get to go to other regions. But with what you're saying, if your kids should come to Ghana now, it will depend on which area you find yourself and the clubs you find around you. But you're not going to pay. But then if they happen to know you're from the U.S., then you're already a victim.
Yeah, no, and I – my wife is African, so –
some contributions. But usually what happens is there's always a rich guy in the area that puts some great talented players that have not had a chance to make it together. And they are like the scouts and the managers of the players. So we have direction. So if your kid is good, one of these guys will just pick him up as his own kid. That is how they treat us. They treat you like their own kid. So at times you end up sleeping at their house instead of your own house because then you'll be tired, but then you still have to do chores. But whilst if you are with them, you probably just get a rest because the next day is important. But then your parents might not see it that way. They were like, well, somebody got to do it and you are the kid, so you are the one doing it. So that is the difference. So it's going to depend on which area you move to and the contacts, the network you make. Because then if, let's say you move to Mount Probi, where I grew up, but then there's teams in Kaswa, which is like an hour away, and they have a great 10-year program, and my area, we are more kind of competitive, aggressive, so we don't pay too much attention to the younger kids, then your kid might not get attention that he deserves.
So let me unpack a couple of things and clarify a few things. So it sounds like you have clubs, but then you also have school soccer. And in this case, school soccer can give you opportunities that maybe your club can't because they're able to travel throughout the region. And that school soccer can be pretty important. And I'll have a question about that. But then you have, and I'll say, benefactors who create their own clubs. And then they recruit their own players. And they're looking at it from perspective of this player has talent. No, I want them to be on my team, but there are also opportunities for them to play abroad. Is that a good way of summarizing it?
Yes, sir.
But with those club, with those school teams, is it only the kids who go to that particular school, or is it the kids in the neighborhood?
Well, that's the thing. Everything is driven by the neighborhood. So, but then they won't say no to somebody coming from Kaswa, an hour away, to attend school in Mount Probi. Now think about it. That means you have to get up super early. Nobody is gonna say, "Hey, don't come to our school." Let's say if I have two great friends I like to play with, and they are in Kaswa, I'll make sure I'm in Kaswa every 6 a.m. because I want to be in a Kaswa school. I'll just transfer there.
Yeah, so here, you know, in the States, you can't do that.
Let me finish the answer, though. So okay. The thing is, nobody can just come from Kaswa and play on a Mount Probi school team. That is not allowed. Okay. Yeah, so you have to be in the neighborhood. So the whole idea behind the system is neighborhood school team playing this other neighborhood school team. So it's really illegal for another neighborhood team, another neighborhood player going attending that neighborhood school to go play for another neighborhood school. No, I mean, we even protest. That's one good thing that happens a lot in school teams, because then some things, they are sneaky. And if my school team is playing another school team and I know a player that I've played in a club level that is not in that area, I would just tell my school coach that, hey, let's find out about this player. And we'll just be quiet and play the game. After the game, win or lose, we're protesting.
Yeah, okay. So we have that here too. But I'm not going to go into the details of it. But, yeah, you cannot do that. Now, here in the States, you can't even – pretend like you're moved, even if you're in a different region and you register for that school, there's still zoning that says, oh, well, you know, you can't be part of that school. And a lot of that is educational, but some of it is athletics as well. Okay, so let's try to recalibrate. In the pay-to-play system here, it's very transactional. If I want my child to get good soccer training, and good is in air quotes because it can be various levels, but at least what I perceive to be good, I can pull out my checkbook, go down to the local club, and get my child on a team. And that child is going to practice 2 to 3 days a week and play games on the weekend. And they're going to be part of a league that offers a gaming that the club uses to offer a gaming program. Okay?
Okay.
Now, if I'm in Ghana, though, it sounds like you're saying there's about three big buckets. One is local clubs that are not pay to play, which we'll describe as grassroots. One is the school system, which is also not pay to play, where the kids who attend that school, who live in that neighborhood, play. And then one are sort of private. I'm going to say private. You correct me. Sort of clubs created by benefactors who bankroll the club. Is that a fair?
Yeah.
Now, in the States, those clubs that I'm talking about either have a professional first team adult. They either fall into two broad categories. They are the youth soccer club for a professional club, either MLS, USL, or something. Or they're just a nonprofit organization that provides youth soccer opportunities. Those are the two broad categories. So I don't know very many. I don't know Ghanaian domestic clubs, professional clubs. I should have done my homework on that. But are there Ghanaian professional clubs that offer youth soccer sort of academies as a pipeline into their first team?
Yes.
Like they do in Europe?
Yes.
And what's the entry point to get there?
Yeah, the entry point is they have scouts that will relocate you So then you are legit to play for that neighborhood. And then,
so can you give me a name of one club that comes to mind? Any?
Just yeah, of course. Yeah, there's like three giant clubs that do that stuff. Asante Kotoko, Accra Hassofo, and then Olympics.
All right. So you're telling me if I bring my son there and he's 10 years old, and you tell me the age that they start, because in the States, you're not going to get on our MLS radar screen until you at least like U13, U14, and that's if you live in that area. If you don't live in that area, it'll be U16, U17 before MLS clubs start noticing in general. But you're telling me if I bring my 10-year-old to Accra and he is lights out, he is Ronaldo, Messi, and everything in put together, and he's playing for these school teams, on a scout from one of those big three clubs will find him. Is that what you're saying? At 10? Or does he have to be older?
No, it doesn't have to be. See, that's the thing. They use the big club as a pipeline to feed the national team and also to feed the Europe markets. But then it's also a pride thing for the community. So it's like somebody finding a diamond in the dust. They're going to run to the next elderly person around them. Hey, look at what I found. So it happens, and it happens that quick if the kid is lights out. But then what happens is, if the kid is not fortunate enough to have just one of the big clubs notice him, then he's good. The downside is if all the three notice him at the same time, then they're going to do, that's where they go to battle. Like we've had so many great players. Even in my era, there were so many great players that played even the national under 17 and national under 20, and their career just went nowhere because these clubs find ways and means to battle among themselves, and then the players just lose interest in playing because then they just find reasons, ways, and means to just kind of blacklist you, and they are just trying to move you around. Like, I can give you a few names. We have someone like Chas Taylor. That kid was like Messi. We have someone like Dombote. That kid was way better than, David Beckham. You put a ball in front of him, he's sending it wherever, and it'll blow your mind. But this kid was supposed to move outside. But then because of the money that was going to come in, the third clubs were fighting among the paperwork, and the outside clubs just gave up on this case. And they still didn't get to harness their full potential. So that is the downside of getting noticed by all the third clubs or getting noticed by just one. And then they just own you, and then your career will be a success.
Yeah, so there's a big debate in the States, and thank you for that, where right now, and they're changing this, so, you know, the listeners can correct me, or you can correct me. Let me tell you what I know for a fact. It used to be there were no, what do they call those things? I don't want to say royalty payments, no loyalty sort of loyalty payments to youth soccer clubs who developed you. So you could be literally signed with Seattle Sounders or, you know, New York Red Bulls back in the day. And then if you're good enough and Everton sees you, they sign you, and there's no transfer payments, no loyalty payments to the MLS club. And they're changing that. Now, the advantage and disadvantage, and what I think I've heard is, it's great if the club gets a fee because obviously they can then use that to support other players in their pipeline, and there's an incentive to develop the player. But the problem is if those contracts are prohibitive, then the European club has to do, not only do they got to get your visa, which is hard, now they got to pay this huge transfer fee, which is, and so that adds a barrier where if you were able to send these American players overseas and get developed, that would effectively elevate the U.S. system in general. So there's a lot of pros and cons. So what it sounds like what you're saying is because the goal is, and in many respects there's parallels to the U.S. system, because the domestic leagues are not as strong and lucrative, for your top players, the goal is to get to Europe, so you don't want them to get locked into these contracts at 12 years old and can't get out of that, those contracts to go to a top academy overseas. That's what I think I'm hearing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But let me throw a couple of things. So we've established, because I still want to focus on the block, what we call the blocking and tackling, more so how does it work before we add any value to it. So we've established if you got a kid, lights out, they sign up for the school team, they're scoring goals, they're doing everything, one of the big three will probably notice them through a scouting apparatus. And you're saying those big three will even be willing to relocate that child as well. Is that a fair statement?
Yes, but there's a little information I'd like to add to that. So in the school, okay, in the school team system, what happens is after the school team is played in that area or zone, we have these corporate giants like Coca-Cola, Milo, and Bonvita, and like all these giants brands, they come in and then they have scouts that pick players and put players together, and then that is one place that these clubs scout players from, and that is a platform where the national team coaches and the scouts for the national team also scout players from.
Okay, so the closest we have that I'm aware of to that would be like a Adidas does something like that. And I'm so, yeah, my boys are really young, so I'm so ignorant to this stuff, so I apologize to the listeners. But like an Adidas type, Adidas Cup, where they put players together, and then everybody goes there and scouts them. So we kind of have that, but not on a massive scale because we have a infrastructure, at least in theory, that does that through the Olympic development programs and these other state cup type programs, in theory. So that's helpful. Okay. All right. So let's take it back. Let's take it back a notch. You know American system because you here. You know, yeah, what, in general, what kind of training I would get if I joined your local academy. If I move, say, my U11 child to Ghana and they join one of the school teams or one of the local clubs, and I'm asking more in general, I know there are a lot of moving parts. Would I, as an American parent, if you could put your American parent hat on, would I be impressed, indifferent? How would I feel about the level of coaching? And then I'm throwing two things at you. How would I feel about the level of coaching? I'm going to throw three things at you. How would I feel about the level of coaching? How would I feel about the level of competition, the kids? And then how would I feel about the league and the facilities and all that other stuff. So coaching, competition, and then just the overall experience.
Okay, let's start with coaching. I think you're going to have a great coaching because they, like, I still love all my coaches to death because, like, they coach you into details. Like we stay on the field, like, forever. Here in the U.S., every coach has an hour because the parents have to go to another meeting and they have a schedule and they have a homework. But back home, we still, if you're good, see, that's the good, that's the other side of it. Before you even get to be on the field, that means you're good. Now, every position has like 20, 200 players that can play that position. So if you're on the field, there's a reason why you're there. So the coaches spend hours, hours running the same drills. Now we have a freedom of play. We do drills, but then we have a freedom of play, but then we're limited to touches. So coaching is great. That I can tell you.
So I'm going to be okay with it. I'm going to say, man, these guys don't charge me any money, and they are coaching from a passion, and they're going to be willing to spend whatever it takes to help me develop. So that's going to be my initial impression. Okay, yes. Now what about the other kids?
Right, and also it's a pride thing. It's like Mourinho versus, what's his name?
Benitez.
Or Arsene Wenger, say Alice. Like that pride of I'm beating you with my kids, that pride, yeah, that's what, yeah. So yeah, okay. That alone is worth millions. Cause mind you, even the coaches have like 20 or 100 people that want to do their job, that are just walking around every day. They are bastarding, conniving, sneaking, like doing whatever to be the main man. So if you are the main man, it's like you're in a hot seat, but you're not getting paid.
So hold on, though. It's so much to unpack. But let's stick with the kid. I do have to say this because you said, hey, there could be hundreds of kids that want your spot. Are you saying, you know how in the States, if I sign my kid up for competitive soccer, they – I wouldn't call them a tryout. They're more of an intent to play. And so they create teams based on the number of kids that try out. They don't really turn kids away. And I'm not passing judgment. That's just how it works. They have their top team, and then they create all these other teams. Or is that not what they do? Or it's like, listen, we need, you know, 20 kids, and that's kind of what we're taking? Or how does that work?
Yeah. See, the thing is, I mean, they're not getting paid. And the players are not getting paid, so they don't want too much to work with.
Mm-hmm.
So, let me give you an example. So where I grew up, there's two. Okay, the compound I go to school at, there's two clubs that train there. So what I did was, and when it comes to how competitive the kids are. We are very damn good competitive. Like, every day I try to practice with Ken Harrison, and I try to practice with Mighty Victory. The reason being, if I don't make the cut in Mighty Victory, I should damn sure make the cut with Ken Harrison. And the reason behind that too is, I might be in Ken Harrison and not get to be on the field. So instead of sitting down there and not getting on the field, I'll be like, well, screw this. I'm going to Mighty Victory. And then I go there. So it's like every day I just alternate between them. And at times, if I'm too late to travel to that field, then I stay with another field close to my house where Saint starts to practice. And when it came to registration, check this out. I went to go register for St. Stars because that is my neighborhood. They wanted to keep me. But then at the registration, they said I was too big and I was too tall. And I was like, what do you guys mean? Like, it's life and death. It's my pride here. Like, you guys are going to kill me. Like, I can't go home and not be registered. Like, what are you guys thinking? It took me 6 months to practice, and I'm here, you guys telling me I'm too big, I'm too tall. Is it my fault I'm growing? Like, I work hard to get picked, and you guys are not going to register me. So what we did was, they have this blue ink they put on your thumb. So we know that, because things is happening to people. So we kind of put saliva on our thumb before they put the ink on it. So as soon as they put the ink on, we just wipe it in our pants. So if you go for one club and you don't get registered, you have the chance to go back in line because if they don't see an ink, you have an option. So that was another tricky way of how competitive we growing up as kids.
Man, that is crazy. I can't wait to tell my son that story, because I think he thinks that it's a right to get to play soccer every day. I'm like, no.
No.
Hold on, though. But what happens if my 10-year-old son moves there and he's just starting, so he's not good enough to make those competitive teams? What options does he have? So, again, let me put it in the States perspective. In the States, one of two things are going to happen. He's going to try out for the travel team. And like I said, they're going to create the team, and those teams at the bottom are only travel teams in name. The kids aren't very experienced yet. Or I'm going to tell him, hey, you should play rec or challenge first to learn the game before you go into a competitive environment. But in Ghana, let's say I move there, he's just starting at 10, he has two left feet, he's trying to learn the basics, and he can't make those competitive teams. What options does he have from a structured soccer perspective?
So what will happen is there's two options that we don't talk about, people don't really pay attention to. There's one called the gambling system. If the kid is good enough to kick a soccer ball, he will just play just an area game. And there's always other coaches that are trying to compete to be in the hot seat. They use that platform. Since they are all volunteering their time, they use that platform and they find a time to compete. So training session for the real competitive players in Ghana usually starts from 5 to, let's say, 8. But then for all these kids, like, let's say, 2 left-footed kid, probably will start around 3. And there are other coaches, because they want to show their worth, they'll put everything into these kids to make them better. Now, when these kids start getting better and they start getting noticed, they get noticed. Now, if the kids start getting better, then he moves to the gambling group where they put a bunch of, like, 12-year-old kids. And then this gambling giant, like Don Kings, put money together. So let's say I bring 500, you bring 500, we have other 3 colleagues bring 500, we'll put it in a pot. We say first, second, third, we break the money down all the way to last team. So we have like 6 teams. So, and then we just pull, we say, okay, we pull in players from this region, and then we find ways, they find ways to just, hey, you, Coach Isaac, build me a team, I'm betting with this guy. I'll be like, for real? I'll be like, okay, good. Now, guess what? In the midst of that competition, coaches get noticed too. So coaches that want to be in the hot seat use those platforms. So your kid has unlimited options. We're just going to compete in an area set up where nobody is telling them what to do. And in the process, somebody sees him and then elevates him to the club coach division where they practice from 3 till the adults show up at 5.
So let me hit a quick timeout and catch everyone up. Again, my name is Neil Crawford. I'm talking to Coach Isaac from Ghana, who has coached in Ghana, has played in Ghana, as well as now coaching in Utah, and he's coaching various areas of the States. So he has a very interesting perspective of both systems. This podcast is called The Inside Scoop, and what we want to do is dig deep into what your child would experience if they were living and playing soccer in those areas. And what I've gathered so far is there are bountiful opportunities in the major cities to play football. You can play either with your club, you can play more competitive within the school, and then there are also these benefactors that kind of create not leagues, but teams for you to play. There's a lot of local and quasi-national pride, even at the youth level. So there's a lot of volunteering coaching, but it's slightly culturally different than it is in the States. because the coaches actually view it almost as a community thing, not so much as just I'm coaching some kids in soccer. Now, what I have been trying to do, which seems like it's not going to fit in a nice boat, is try to apply some of those rigid frameworks that we use in the States to Ghana. And it sounds like it just doesn't work exactly like that. They, you know, it sounds like there's always an exception to a rule. You could be playing for this club and then maybe play for your school club, or you may be on this team and then someone else comes and creates a team. It sounds like there's a little bit more fluid motion, a little bit more unorthodox within a developing country, in that, and it's reflected in how the youth soccer culture is set up. But the common denominator is the coaches are extremely passionate, right? There is no pay to play as we know it.
Yes.
If you are lights out, if you are really talented, there is a domestic professional apparatus that will scout you, get you into their academy, and sign you up for a contract. That has pros and cons.
Yes.
There are pathways for children who are just learning the game in a more informal / formal setting. Coaches that want to build their coaching pedigree will take these teams on in the hope of being discovered by one of the clubs. There's a lot of volunteerism going on, but I'm not sure if anybody's getting paid, and I'm not exactly sure how that works. So I want to go over that. And then we talked about how do you compare the level of coaching, the level of play, and what we need to touch on is the overall facilities, the look and feel, what am I going to see in terms of games, uniform, more of a visceral experience when I sign up. So in terms of the coaching, we've established that, hey, coaching is going to be really good because they're going to give you way more contact hours. They're not going to think about it like that, though. They're thinking about it as, I'm trying to develop you competitively, but you're going to get someone who's really passionate and wants to have a good team. From a competition perspective, because there are hundreds of kids trying to get a few slots, they're not thinking about it like I'm trying out. They're thinking about it like, hey, I'm going to try to do whatever I can to make this team. So competitively, you're going to have a totally different perspective, a totally different level of commitment that you probably would get at your typical club. But what I didn't go over is, you know, typical youth soccer in America, I sign up, I get a team snap alert, it has all my games and my tournaments, and we're going to go down here and we're going to play. They tell you need to buy these two uniforms, and you get an email, you buy those, and then you get in your van and you go to these well-manicured facilities and you play, and there's some official referee and blah, blah, blah. What would I experience if I signed my kid up in general in a club in Ghana, if you compare it to my, and I'll call this for the sake of argument, my team snap experience in the States?
Well, we do have the same clubs compete among themselves, and we do have levels. But then in the coast division, in the kids division, we don't have like steps. We have just one flat level. So if your kid don't make it on one club, you have the option to have him go try out on another club. That is one side of it. But then the other side of the
But let me cut you off though. But what about the look and feel? Because you've been here in the States, am I going to well-manicured pitches that have everybody's wearing the exact same uniform? Is it, you know, imagine me from Cary, North Carolina to Ghana, and I'm, what am I going to see when my son goes to the first game?
Okay, you're not going to buy any uniform because every club owns their own uniform.
Okay.
And they pay for play cards themselves, so you don't pay anything if you're selected. And what else? Yeah, the fields, it depends on which area you are and how a community takes care of the field. Now, usually the schools the schools, the clubs use fields that the schools own because they build, the system is they build schools around fields. But then most of them are not manicured, like they are not up to standard. There's tons of erosion. There's a lot of like gravels, like just little round stones. Those are actually fun to play on. If like you play on that and you play on grass, you can play more than Pele because it gives you extra thinking to control your ball and your movement and everything. Because any least thing you do is like you're playing on roller skate.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you, so if I had to sum it up, it can be, it can vary to what I've seen in the States to something that will be a little bit different. Now, we are running, I want to go ahead and get a couple more questions in. Then I want to hear more about what you're doing here in the States, and then we'll wrap it up. Okay. So in the States, culturally, right, the parents have become, of competitive soccer players in general, have become very actively involved, okay? And a material amount of these parents believe and do, and I'm one of them, try to work with their kids specifically. I'm going to take my kid to the park on Monday and Wednesday, and I'm going to train them, okay? How would you describe, does that happen in, are you, do you see that sort of interaction with the parents, or is it more of a hands-off?
I would say it's a hands-off, because the funny thing is my dad was a professional goalie. He never came to any of my practice. He never showed up at any of my games. And my mom was busy with selling stuff at the market. So, yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, so my wife happens to be Ethiopian, totally different culture. And then, you know, I have a lot of African friends, and I live in London a long time. And my general, and I hate to generalize, but my general impression is they view youth sports as more of a distraction from the important thing, which is education. So the last thing they're going to do is invest a lot of time in training you in soccer. That's my general impression.
Yes and no, because it depends on the individual and which house you're coming from, whether you guys value education or not. So that means nobody outside can sway you one direction. You can be good and you can still have a great education, because we do have some of the great educations, except we keep learning old stuff.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. All right, yeah. So now let me pivot to another thing, and I just want to get your opinion on this. In the blogosphere, the Facebook, social media sphere, there's a heavy emphasis by U.S. parents on the importance of street soccer, and I'm going to use air quotes, street soccer, as you would imagine it, and the lack of street soccer or free play in this, in organic kind of play in the States, is one, as the theory goes, is one of the things that impede sort of American soccer development. First of all, when you start thinking about your earliest, you know, memories of soccer, how would you describe it? I mean, I'm talking about 4 years old up. And how would you describe street soccer in Ghana? So we talked a lot about the structure of playing soccer, but just the day-to-day, like what, how would you describe that?
It's so fun, man. It's so fun. Like, the way I see it is I don't like playing on the same field every day. So 5 days in a week, I just go to. So the good thing about it, too, we don't need a big field to start playing. Any open space we can find in the house, I literally play in my own house with my own cousins. And then we invite some friends in. I mean, at times we have some parents that will seize our ball, and then we have to go beg or go, like, fill their drums with water before they give us our ball back. Like, that was how we grew up. And then we played, our parents, when we do good, they buy us, like, these plastic balls. and we just we compete in our own compound, and then we go to other compounds. The only thing about that is that ball goes too far than you want it to, so at times we lose it, and then you go home and you're really sad, and you still get a whooping, because that means you wasted money. So, yeah, there's a side to when you realize people that go to school and attend education don't get anywhere, and you are skillful with your feet, then you start evaluating what's the point. So in that sense, that's what it will sound or look like. Some will focus more on soccer. And the free play helped us a lot. And I think that's heading the U.S. soccer because everything is kind of structured. And that's one thing I incorporate in my coaching now. I don't build boxes. I just give them free play. I give them information. I say, hey, go show me what your imagination will tell you to. And then if there's any add-ons, I do. If not, then you're great. Because eventually you're going to be thinking for yourself when you're on the field anyway.
Exactly. No, exactly. Okay, so here's my last sort of, I guess, specific question. And then I want to hear what you're doing here in the States and what your plans are. And then we'll share some more information about you in the show notes. So another thing in the States, and it's pretty controversial, is the role of what they call youth sports specialization. And the way they're really defining it from a specific term, specific perspective, is focusing almost exclusively on one sport at an early age. And it's the reason it's a debate, I think, is because a lot of it depends on how you define sports specialization. But I'm not here to pass judgment either way. I'm just kind of trying to tee it up. When you're in Ghana, you can think about your childhood, you can think about what the kids are experiencing now. Do they play other structured sports? And if they do, is that encouraged? Because, you know, here in the States, it's not uncommon for a kid to play American football, American baseball, basketball, and soccer. That's not unusual. I felt like when I lived in Europe, that would have been sort of unusual to play that many different sports.
Yeah.
So, per se, and that's a huge per se. I mean, you had schools, PE programs where you obviously you play, but to be in a competitive type environment, like with three or four different sports, my hypothesis is that's unusual. So, with that being said, what's your take on sports specialization?
Yeah, in Ghana, there's no limit as long as you are talented enough and you're doing it right, mind you. We compete a lot because it's all about your pride and the name. The key point is your last name. If your last name is mentioned a lot, you create a certain pedigree for your family and you're noticed more when you go to family gatherings. So you want to keep that standard. It's your responsibility to create that standard and keep it. And also when it comes to the question again, sorry.
No. And that's totally fine because I threw a lot at you. I'm basically saying my older son, right, he enjoys playing flag football and basketball and these kind of things. But in Ghana, if he was in Ghana, would he have the opportunity to play other sports? And would that be encouraged? Or is everybody just kind of focused on soccer?
Okay, so soccer is the only, let's say, baseball stadium and NFL stadium that we have in Ghana. I mean, there are other sports like hockey. So I played hockey. I just didn't like when the boys whacked at somebody and they swole up. So I quit earlier on. But then it was there. So the thing is, we always have a big field and they build schools all around it. So there are sports available. But then soccer is ranked really high. So nobody pays attention to people playing tennis or even ping pong or basketball or table tennis, I mean, ping pong is table tennis, or playing hockey, or playing other sports. Like, I wish I had given myself the time or the chance to play cricket, but then in my thinking at that time, if you are not at practice and you are at somewhere else and somebody shows up and they perform, you're done.
Okay, so it's so competitive that even if you didn't want to specialize, you kind of have to, with soccer, you kind of have to decide a little bit earlier. Okay, yeah. So this has been great. This is Neil Crawford with the Inside Scoop talking to Coach Isaac. And Coach, pronounce your, because I don't want to butcher it, pronounce your last name for me one more time.
Akolache.
Akolache. So talking to Coach Isaac Akolache, comparing Ghanaian youth soccer pathways to the U.S., this has been a wonderful show. I've learned so much. And I feel like we need to have a follow-up because it's just so much information. So before I let you go, though, so tell me about what you're doing in Utah, what your plans are. I'll link how to contact you in the show notes. But if you have a website or you want listeners to hear anything, just take it away.
Okay, so I moved here to Utah to solve most of U.S. problems or my own personal problems I couldn't solve when it comes to developing the athlete. Or let me put it well, the player athlete. So okay. I keep having this premonition of we've lost a lot of great players in the past, and the few that we have, why should Messi win 10 Ballon d'Ors? That is like a rip to the game.
Yeah, so I understand that perspective. It's sort of like, yes, he's great, but there are billions of people out there. So that tells you something's not right.
Because the other people are not competing enough, or they not putting themselves higher enough. And so the few, like Messi at times wins stuff that, be like, did I really win it? Because there's no one else out there. And at the old days, they had all these Pele and all these giant players. You are scared of their name before they show up on the field. And when they show up, they deliver. But now we've lost all that touch. So my goal is to find a few players that are dedicated and want to be great and then put all my energy into helping them harness their already born talents that they possess.
And
my website is soccermagnet.com. Soccermagnet801.
Oh, okay. So I'll link that in the show notes. It sounds like you do some private training. You also coach, and you're very focused on development. And if we get out to Utah, I'd love for you to work with my son. And if you ever come to the Carolinas, then definitely let's connect, because I'd love to hear more about and see your coaching in action. So
definitely.
With that being said, my only thing is, and everybody that knows me knows that I do have a love-hate relationship with Ghana, because you guys knocked us out of the World Cup twice. And
well, you guys did too. God,
it was so depressing. Talk about depressing. Oh, especially for it to happen twice. But, hey, you know what?
Anytime Ghana play U.S., we have this mentality that we are always hungry and you guys have it made. So even if you guys have the best structure, just the hunger and the, the ego we have is like Tyson fighting somebody he's not supposed to fight.
You know what? And I could see that, because I just remember vividly I was living in London, and I think it went down to penalties, one of them. I was just so depressed. And then I know one time they scored, like, at the very end. It just hurt.
Yeah, that's what we do.
But, you know, hey, it's all good in the game, in the name of global soccer, bringing our countries together. So, Listen, thank you so much for joining Inside Scoop. For you listeners, check out anytime-soccer.com to get access to some free training videos. I hope you found this podcast helpful. Next week, we're probably going to be headed over to London to talk about youth soccer in London. We have a wonderful show lined up there. And then the following week, we're headed to Brazil to talk about youth soccer pathways in Brazil. And then once we get all around the world, we're going to circle back, and I'm going to circle back to Ghana and have a follow-up conversation with Coach Isaac just to check in on how he's doing. So, again, this is Neil Crawford with Anytime Soccer Training. You've been listening to Coach Isaac from Ghana, now in Utah. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed the show.